The passage from Bereishit to Shemot takes place in the parasha of Vayechi. The change, I mean, Bereishit is a book about individuals, and Shemot is a book about the nation of Israel. And somehow this transfer took place at the end in the parasha of Vayechi, where the individuals became subsumed under the banner of the nation. Now, when exactly did that happen? Where in the parasha of Vayechi did that actually take place? So, if you look at the last source on the sheet, on the first page, this is the story. Yaakov Avinu has blessed all his children. And we know that the blessings are not exactly blessings. It's a topic for another discussion. But after he finishes blessing his children, he talks to them about burying him in Eretz Yisrael. And the psukim are Pasuk Kavtet, Perek Mem Tet, Pasuk Kavtet is the beginning. Vayitzav otam vayom aleihem. He commanded them. He, Yaakov, commanded them, right, Bnei Yisrael. I mean, the people who were there, right, his children. Vayomer aleihem ani nesaf el ami, right, ani nesaf el ami. Yavashiach. Ani nesaf el ami means I'm dying, right? And then he says, Kivru oti el avotai, bury me with my forefathers, El Hamarash Abistei Efron Achiti, in that special cave that was in the land of Ephron Achiti, Bamarash Abisadam Machbelash, the Pneim Amre, Beretz Kenan, Asher Kana Abraham, Eta Sadem, Eta Efron Achiti, Lachuzat Kever. So he gives the exact location, Nekudot Tziyun. Is the way you say it in Hebrew. Right? You want to find the place, you identify it as much as you possibly can. And that's what Yaakov did. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Shama Kavru et Abraham, that Sarah Ishto, Shama Kavru et Yitzchak, that Rivka Ishto, Vishama Kavarti et Leah. In all of these places, I died. I mean, all these, I'm saying, in this place, all of these people were buried. Right? My father, my grandfather, my father's wife, my grandfather's wife, they were all buried in that place. Miknei ha-sadev ha-mara asher bo me'et b'nei chet, v'yechal Yaakov, I think it's missing something, v'yechal Yaakov litzavot et b'nav yesof raglav el amita v'yigva, but yeah, safe elamo, and here you have this triliteral death. Right? He dies three times in this pasuk. You see it says, yes, sof raglav elamita, which is a way of saying he died. Vayigva, which is another way of saying he died. Vayasef elamav is another way of saying he died. So there isn't anybody who died more than Yaakov Avinu died. And yet, if you look at the Rashi, this refers back to the to our pasuk, right? Vayigva, vayeasef, umita lo nemra bo. It says the word, the Hebrew word mavet, mem vav tav. That Hebrew word does not appear in the pasuk. Every other word that indicates somebody died does appear. So mita lo dem rabo, it means that word mavet did not appear in the pasuk. V'amru abotenu, so he quotes the Gemara in Ta'anit, Yaakov Avinu lo meit. I'm sorry, I'm reading the Ramban. This is Rashi though. This is Rashi. So Yaakov Avinu lo meit lashon Rashi. So we don't know what Rashi meant. Rashi may have quoted the Gemara just in order to sort of tell us that there was something special about the death of Yaakov because the idea, the regular death, which is mavet, vayamot, mot yumat, all of those various combinations, not used for Yaakov, but a kind of oblique statements, kind of vayasef elamav, vayigva. He pulled up his legs because in the fetal position, which is how some people think you die. So, Rashi doesn't really tell us. Erbervontuns, you know, he warns us. He says, listen, pay attention. Pay attention that the word mavet is not used. Why? Okay, maybe Rashi doesn't explain that. But it doesn't mean necessarily that Rashi thought that Yaakov didn't die, which is the way it's often explained. How can you say he thought that Yaakov didn't die? Yaakov died in triplicate, right? Every possible word indicating death is in that posuk. The only word that's not there is mavet. So we say Yaakov avinu lo met. It means the word mavet is not associated with Yaakov Avinu. There's something special about the fact that he died. He died, but there's something special about it. And that special is called in the Gemara, Yaakov Avinu lo met. Rashi says, he goes on, he says, Ledat Raboteinu, Rei Yaakov Iskir Mita Batzmo. He says, I don't understand. Yaakov Avinu talks about himself as dying. Hinei Anochi met. He says, I'm going to die. He says to the people who are standing with him. He says, he doesn't understand. The Ramban is incredulous about this statement of Chazal. What possible meaning could this have? If Yaakov Avinu, he doesn't quote the fact that it is Pasuk here, he doesn't mention that he died three times, but he says, Yaakov Avinu said himself that he's going to die, or he's about to die. So how could the Chachamim say that Yaakov Avinu lo met? Doesn't make any sense. In other words, Ramban is relating to the literal statement in the Gemara, Yaakov Avinu lo met, assuming that that means that somehow Yaakov Avinu didn't die. And he says, it can't be. It can't be that that's what the Gemara means, because after all, Yaakov Avinu said about himself, I'm about to die. He felt it. He was old, he was tired, he was about to die. So how could there be any disagreement about that? Okay? Now this story, this is the tzivui, the command that Yaakov Avinu gave to his sons, especially to Yosef. But this command is taken up again when Yosef has to justify, his taking his father to Chutz La'aretz. And then there's a story, page 2 at the top, where Paul Yosef al Pinei Aviv Vayef Kala Vayishak Lo Vayitzav Yosef Adavadav. Yaakov died. It's another thing. Yaakov died. How can you say Yaakov Avinu lo met? He died. And this is the story of what happened when he died. Vayitzav Yosef et Avadav et Harofim lechaneit et Aviv. Lechaneit means, what do you call that in English?
Embalm.
Yeah, I never could figure that out. But apparently the Egyptians were good at this. And some would even say that that's what lo met means. That most dead people in Egypt who couldn't afford this particular kind of treatment, they died and they're stuck into the ground and they disintegrated like everybody else does. But if you had protexia of a certain kind or a good visa, you could get embalmed. And embalmed meant that to the Egyptians, I think, although I'm not an expert on Egyptian religion, they meant to the Egyptians lo met.
Immortal in a sense.
What?
You're immortal in a sense in another place.
I guess. Okay, but at any rate, you don't die, because people who die also disintegrate. They don't remain embalmed in as a mummy. Right? That that is not way, the way it works. So maybe that's what they meant when they said Chazal, when they said Yaakov Avinu lo meit, that this is also called lo meit. This describes the lo meit. But I would say it's speculative. I don't really know. The only thing we know is that we probably tend to agree, we tend to agree with the Ramban, who felt that it could not mean, possibly mean, that he didn't die, that he was still alive. It wasn't the messianic personality of Yaakov that we are talking about. So, that's that pasuk. The next pasuk says, pasuk gimel, vayim l'u bo aba imyon, kiken yim l'u yimei hachanutim, vayivku oto mitzrayim shivim yom. This is like getting to be a really a major event in Egyptian history. So Yosef now has to plead to be allowed to take his father to Eretz Canaan. Now what does he say? Avi ishviyani lemor inenachi meit bekivri asher kariti li beretz Kanaan shama tikbereini vata ale davek barat avi v'ashuv. So you read the pasuk and you remember the pasukim we read before. You know that Yaakov Avinu did not say to Yosef. Which phrase did he not say? But inen anochi meit bekivri. Asher kariti li be'eretz Kanaan. He never said that. Asher kariti li be'eretz Kanaan. What is that? What's it got to do with it? Why couldn't Yosef just talk to Paro and tell him what Yaakov actually said? He didn't say Asher kariti li, but in order to understand, you have to look at Rashi. So we'll look at Rashi. Asher kariti li, you see pasuk, pasuk hey, right? Asher kariti li, kipshuto. One explanation is kipshuto. What does kipshuto mean? I'll go look up the word in the dictionary, kariti, and whatever the dictionary says, that's what we'll say. So that's what Rashi says, lemaaseh. Kimo, ki tichre ish. Ki tichre ish means, we'll dig it, you'll dig a hole. Right? You'll dig a hole. So that's what it says, that in the Marata Machpelah, there is already a hole that is prepared for Yaakov Avinu's burial. So yeah, so Yosef was somehow making an argument. I mean, like if we'd imagined ourselves, Yosef says, "Let's bury. We're going to bury him in Eretz Canaan." And Paro says, "What kind of place is that? There's nobody lives there. There's nothing going on there. Bury him here in Mitzrayim. We have Luxor and we have pyramids and we have sphinxes. We're the great burial people of the ancient world." Nobody beats us, and you already started with Chanata. So what is he going to say? What is Yosef going to say to Paro? So apparently, according to Rashi, according to this interpretation of Rashi, he said, I can't do that because my father already prepared his burial. Oh, that's something else. You're going to go against the death wish of Yaakov Avinu. You know about death wishes? I don't know so much, but I've seen them mentioned in movies. The death wish, it's like a big deal. You don't just deny somebody's death. So if he dug a hole in the Marata Machpelah, then there should be some kind of obligation that his children have to actually get him there. It's the beginning of it. It's not just that Yaakov may not have known. You could say he didn't know how good it is to be buried in Mitzrayim. He didn't know how stylish the funerals in Mitzrayim could be. So that's what Rashi says. Then Rashi says, Umedrasho. Now, I don't have to tell you that when Rashi says Kipshuto, and then Rashi says Kimedrasho, even though Rashi himself, in several times of Bereshit and again in Noah, always says that he is a Pashtan. Right? I think about the Elale, the Fesh Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's Rashi. So that if he leaves Pshuto Shel Mikra and he goes to the Medrash, that is always an important thing. There's something, it was as Rashi is saying, that the method that's called Pshat doesn't work, or doesn't give me sufficient results. It doesn't tell me what the Torah really wanted me to know. So that's Umed Rasho. I'm saying, you know, that Rashi is always means 98% of the time, dependent on Chazal. Right? He uses Chazal. So that's not what we would call Pshat today. But Rashi called that Pshat. He said, if the choice between one Chazal and another Chazal is Pshat. Right? Not, you know, not the kind of Pshat that you get from looking at the new translations of the Bible into English. So the first answer is Kipshuto. Then he says, Medrasho. Od, Mityashev al Halashon, Kemo, Asher Kaniti. There's another way to explain the word Kariti, right? And that explanation is Kaniti. And he says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, he quotes the Gemara, Shalachti lekarche ayam, when I went to some islands in the middle of the Mediterranean, Hayu korin lemichira, kira. They didn't say the Hebrew word mechira, which is sale, a sale, but they used the word kira. So asher kariti has to do with a sale. Asher kariti. So who's the sale? What sale are we talking about? What sale we took? Moshe Kaniti Amar Rav Gezel Krachim. You call it the Mechira Kira. The old Medrasho further drash the Lashon Kri Dagur. Kri is a pile. Right, you take all the thing that grows out in the field, you collect it before your house, you set it up in a pile, and you amorchim at that Kri. You top it off, and then you make another pile. Right, that's what the Kri is. A Kri is a pile. So what's it got to do with us? Rashi, he says, Shenatal Yaakov kol kesef izahav shehevi mi beit lavan v'asa oto Kri. When Yaakov came back to Eretz Yisrael, he took all of the good things that he brought from the house of Lavan, and he piled them up in a kind of a pile. V'amar la'esav, Tol zeh bishvil chalkecha ba'me'ara. So this is Rashi. You know Rashi? Rashi says, what does asher kariti li mean? He means, I bought it. I bought it kinyan. But that doesn't explain why the Torah, Yaakov, Yosef, why Yosef used such a strange word. It may be absolutely correct. Maybe absolutely correct that the word kariti can mean kinyan. You're correct, I don't even know what that, but you know, that's the way it is. And that in these islands that Rabbi Akiva visited, they actually used that word. And it's absolutely correct. But the one thing that is not explained is why use that word and not the simple word, asher kaniti. And so for Rashi, the answer to that second question is, because there's a hidden meaning that you have to explore in order to understand what Yosef said to Paro. Asher kaniti means, okay, it belongs to me, I did it for this purpose, I've got to follow the wishes of Yaakov Avinu, and there's no doubt about that. But really, Yosef says there's something else going on here. There's something else going on here that Yaakov prepared a nachala in Eretz Yisrael that was different than the nachala that he inherited. He inherited 50% of the Maratha Machpelah, but he made sure that he would acquire 100% of the Maratha Machpelah, and that's the hidden meaning in the Pasuk. That's why Yosef said that Yaakov said, Asher Kariti Li. I hope that this is understood. And then, if you look again at the story starting in Pasuk Zayin, Vayal Yosef Likbor et Aviv, Vayalu Oto Kol Avdei Paro, Zikne Beito, because Zikne Eretz Mitzrayim. You see what an affair this was. I mean, okay, they didn't bury him in Eretz Mitzrayim, but the Egyptians took over Eretz Canaan. I mean, look who came. His entourage that came with Yosef. This was a big deal. What was going on here? Pasuk Tet, Vayali Mogam Arechagam Parashim, Vayhi Machanek, Veid Modem. What did Yosef say? Let me go and bury my father in the Marat HaMachpelah. What did the Egyptians say? Oh, if you have to do it, we'll come with you. How many? All of us. I mean, I don't know who all of us is, but I mean, I guess all the important guys with their horses and their chariots. Can you imagine this invasion of Eretz Canaan that's taking place in order to bury Yaakov? There's something going on. A statement that is being made for the nations of the world. For everybody who could hear and see. Everybody knew about this burial. Everybody knew that there was something happening that was special. So if you look at that's Pasuk Tet. Pasuk Yud, Yevoad, Gurin, Hadad, Asher, Be'evet, Ayadet. Okay, you'll see the Pasukim. Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayasu, Banav, Lo, Ken, Kasher, Tzivam. And here you have this mention. Right? What happened? Who did it? Who buried Yaakov? Banav. Not Yosef. Very good. Not Yosef. Banav. In other words, something happened. There was a kind of a moment of parody. Yosef and the brothers were all together in this act of burying Yaakov. Banav. And you know that when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, when they came back, you look at the last pasuk in this section. Vayiru achei Yosef ki meit aveihem, vayomru lo yistemenu Yosef, vashev yeshiv lanu et kol ra'ah shegabalnu oto. In other words, back in Eretz Mitzrayim, the distinction existed. Yosef, who was the Mishneh Lamelech, and their other brothers. In Eretz Yisrael, Banav. They were all together. There was something about this process of burial which was very important and which changed the relationship between Yaakov, his children, Yosef, right? That their whole lives, Yosef stood apart from his brothers. Justifiably, perhaps. He was the one who became king in Mitzrayim. He's the one who saved the family. He's the one who brought them down to Mitzrayim. He was the king of Egypt. And it's true that as long as Yaakov was alive, the brothers felt protected from the ire of Yosef or the wrath of Yosef. They were protected. But now that the father had died, but the one last act that happened about that took place with the father and the son was that the brothers all buried their father together. Now this reminds me, if you go back to the first page here, the second section, Berakapay. We're talking about Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, it says, "V'le'ah pilakshim Hashem Avraham natan Avraham matanot v'yishalchem me'al Yitzchak beno ba'odenu chai kedma el eretz kedem." So Avraham Avinu had other sons besides Yitzchak and Yishmael, and they were the children of Keturah, as the pasuk says. Now Avraham Avinu wanted to disconnect himself from those other sons. And how did he do that? He separated them from the Yerusha. They didn't inherit. They were not going to inherit Avram Avinu. Now how did he do that? He paid them off. He said, you can inherit now. You won't inherit mimita, from death. Because as anybody who's learned these sugyot in the Gemara understands, there's something special about inheritance after death. It doesn't demand a kinyan, right? The children don't have to do anything. They're automatically the father's property. You know, I wouldn't say intellectual property, but his spiritual property and his physical property is bestowed automatically on his children because they are his children. Now, if you exclude somebody from this, you exclude a child from this process by paying them off in advance, then apparently something about the relationship between the father and the son is torn asunder. It's not quite the same. I say father and son, but I mean the father and the daughters as well. It's just that here, we're only talking about sons. So that Avraham Avinu saw in Yerusha, in this process of inheritance, a statement of great importance. Who inherits Avraham Avinu? Only the one who can inherit Avraham. Now you know that Yishmael was sent away much earlier. His mother, they were given support, but they were sent away. He was not included in the inheritance, Yishmael. The children of Keturah are sent away much later. Here there's an interesting side point. It says, Livneha Pilakshim. Right, okay, I don't know what Pilakshim is, but they're not real wives. I mean, not first-class wife, second-class wife, something like that. That's a Pilegesh. I mean, halachically, Rashi will clarify a little bit. But Rashi says this, and this is like a very important point, I think, about Rashi. Rashi says, Chaser Ktiv. Chaser Ktiv means that it's, the spelling is not plene. That's what they used to say in the olden days, when if you said a word in Latin, it meant you were very clever. Today, you have to sing say the words of a rock song to be called very clever. But you know that sometimes in Hebrew there's a fuller spelling and a less full spelling. And in modern times they try to use the fuller spelling all the time because they don't vocalize like in a newspaper. You read a newspaper, so there's usually no vocalization in newspaper except for those newspapers that they make for the Ulpan. But most newspapers are not vocalized. So if they're not vocalized, they use this plene spelling. So when Rashi says chaser ktiv, he's talking about this word pilakshim. And what he means is that, see, there are two yuds in this word pilakshim. Mm-hmm. It means one of them doesn't belong there. It's not there. Which one is not there? The second one. Let's imagine pilakshim. Shin yud shin mem at the end instead of shin yud mem. Of course, the problem with this Rashi is that it just doesn't happen to be correct. It's not true. In every single Sefer Torah that you could ever find, this is part of what the Minchat Shai taught us, that every Sefer Torah, it's spelled full with Shin Yun Mem at the end. So how could Rashi say Chaser Ktiv? So the answer is in the continuation. So Rashi says, Chaser Ktiv, Shelo Haita Ela Pilegesh Achat, V'Hagar Hiktura. How's that? In other words, Rashi says the proof that this woman who had further children with Avraham Avinu was Hagar, the same Hagar who was the mother of Yishmael, the proof of that is that the second yud is missing. That's what Rashi says. What do you think of that?
Rest my case.
But if you don't want to rest your case, you can look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, "See, apilakshim." You see, what is Rashi? What is the Rashbam saying? Agar Ktura. Whereas according to the Rashbam, there were two of them. There were two wives. So you could say, well, the Rashbam, who was a grandson of Rashi, he looked around and he said, what's Rashi talking about? There is a yud there. How can you say there's no yud? Question. Answer, there is a yud. And if there is a yud, so Pilakshim is a plural. If it's a plural, it means there are at least two of them. That's the smallest amount that you could have in a plural, is two. The Gemara says that. So that now, there's a machlokas between Rashi and the Rashbam. What's the machlokas about? between Rashi and the Rashba. What's the much longer? This is all a side point, but I think it's cute. What's the machlokes about? Rashi is quoting Chazal. And Rashi's saying, what difference does it make? What difference does it make if there is a yud or there isn't a yud? The insight of Chazal is based on their intuition. That Chazal were able to feel things, to understand things. What difference does it make if I have a proof? So Rashi says, Chaser Ktiv, that's the Lashon of Chazal. Right, so what happened to that Sefer Torah where there was no Yud? I don't know what happened to it, and we'll find it someday. Well, we won't find it someday. I mean, what's the difference? So that's what Rashi says. Chaser Ktiv. That's the quote from Chazal, and since they say that, there's no reason not to repeat it. But the Rashbam, who considered himself to be the more ultimate kind of Pashtan, you know, he was only going to deal with reality. Rashbam says, look, I never heard of such a thing, I don't know of such a thing, and therefore, as far as I'm concerned, the word pilakshim is a plural, and not a singular, and it refers to both wives that Abraham had. So now we go on, Pasuk Zayin, Ve'eli yimei shnei chayei Abraham asher chay me'at shana, v'shivim shana, v'chamesh Shanim, Vaigvava Yamot Abraham, Beseva Tova, Zakedis Tova, Yesef El Amav. You know, see, Abraham only died twice. He said, Abraham is Vaigva, I'm sorry, Vaigva three times. Vayamot. What's Mot? Yaakov Avinu, Lo Mate. The word mate doesn't appear in the statement, in the obituary of Yaakov Avinu. So that's Yaakov Avinu, Lo Mate. Abraham a third way of dying. He died three times. Now this is absolutely inconceivable. How did Yishmael get into this deal? How did Yishmael was sent away? He wasn't a son of Abraham. He was sent away. They gave him some stuff, you know, at some coupons to some store, and they go. How is it possible that Yishmael and Yitzchak together buried Abraham Avinu? So Rashi says, Rashi, very simple, very simple. Yitzchak and Yishmael. Rashi, Mikan Shasa Yishmael Tshuva. V'holich et Yitzchak lefanav. You see the pasuk, what it says? Who buried Avram Avinu? Yitzchak v'Yishmael. Who is older? Yishmael was older. Who appears first in the pasuk? Yitzchak. And that was the sign that Yishmael did tshuva, and that he understood that Yitzchak was the superior religious personality. Well, there was a superiority to him that had to be maintained. Was the fact that the pasuk says Yitzchak v'Yishmael, that Yishmael allowed Yitzchak to be the primary, the prime mover, so that you see that there's a problem, that Yishmael should not have buried his father because he was sent away. Just as the Bnei Keturah was sent away, and they did not come back to bury their father. So you have, the only way to understand that, according to Rashi, is to say that somehow there was a radical change that took place, and that Yishmael changed. He was a different person. He was worthy, to some extent, of being the son of Abraham, and therefore, he buried him. So you see already with Abraham, with the burial of Abraham, that to bury your father is a sign that you have accepted the inheritance. If it's a physical inheritance, if it's a spiritual inheritance. The Bnei Keturah represent the sons of Abraham who did not accept that inheritance, that idea, and therefore they were not buried. And Yishmael, I mean, certainly it's a problem, but Yishmael apparently somehow did accept this spiritual the spiritual inheritance and physical inheritance from Avraham Avinu, who is able to participate with Yitzchak in the burial of his father. Needless to say, that if Yishmael represents somehow Islam, right, in the widest possible sense, there's no doubt that the religion that's called Islam, in some ways, is very, very accepting of certain great ideas that Judaism bequeathed them to them. Right? There's something about this which is true. Any event. There's one more pasuk which is not, it's not on the sheet for some terrible reason. It's my fault. Perek, but if you make a note of it, Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Kaf Tet. Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Kaf Tet. Vayigva Yitzchak Lamot. Yitzchak died. And by Yitzchak it says Vayigva. That's a word of death. The same thing we have by Yaakov. And Lamot, the same word that we have by Abraham. Right? Mavet. Again, I remind you, Yaakov Avinu lo mate. Yaakov Avinu lo mate, but Abraham mate. And Yitzchak mate. Meaning that those words are used, that word is used by Avraham and Yitzchak. Here the pasuk says, "Vayigva Yitzchak vayamot vayasef elamav zaken usva yamim, zaken usva yamim, vayikberu oto esav v'Yaakov banav, vayikberu oto esav v'Yaakov banav." So here, even though Rashi doesn't say, it just says that who buried Yitzchak? Esav and Yaakov. So according to this theory that I'm trying to develop, that you have to be a son, you have to be, right, in order to... So there's no doubt that Esav was a lot closer to his father since he was a twin. He was a son and a twin. It wouldn't be so easy to get rid of him. Right? And what did the Rashi teach us, Asher Kareiti Li? What did Rashi say? What did Rashi say? That Yaakov was able to make a tikkun. It was when Yaakov and Esav buried their father Yitzchak. So Yitzchak, Esav was the son of Yitzchak. Esav was the son of Yitzchak. He was a brother, a twin brother of Yaakov. And he was the owner. Because he wasn't sent away. He was the owner of Marat HaMachpelah. So that this aberration was corrected by Yaakov, according to Rashi. Was corrected by Yaakov because Yaakov went and he paid off Esav, became the sole owner of the Marat HaMachpelah. And therefore, when Yaakov is buried, we don't hear any more about Esav. We don't hear anymore, but Esau and the children of Esau, I mean, nobody came to participate in this close relative's burial because he had no connection. He, by that time, had really, really had no connection. So we see that, the moment when Am Yisrael was created was when all the brothers came together to bury their father Yaakov. Right, and there was a certain parity that was established between the Eretz Yisrael. And even though a lot of Egyptians came along as to kind of increase the honor of the event, there is no doubt that it was the brothers who buried Yaakov Avinu, and that was the change, that when they buried him, there was no ranking. Nobody said some brothers are more important than others. Some sons of Yaakov are more sons of Yaakov than others. It was all Banav. There was just Banav. When they came back to Egypt, as we pointed out, there was this problem. Yosef became Yosef, the king of Egypt again, and the brothers were worried, that up to now it had all been kept in check because of the fact that Yaakov was alive. Yaakov lived for 17 years in Eretz Mitzrayim, but during those years we could assume that everybody thought that Yosef would not act against his brothers. I would like to just look at the end of this Pritzadik. This Pritzadik is very interesting. but it's not something that we can do right now. If you look at the end, you count lines from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the Kevan. You see in the middle of the line, 9 lines from the bottom, 9 or 10 lines from the bottom, depending how you look at it. Kevan, Shakol me Hashem Yitbarach. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that the Pritzadik was a Talmud of Ishbitz, right? And this is an Ishbitz comment. He says, Kevan Shakol me Hashem Yitbarach, Memele Akol Tov. Since, after all, everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only Tov, so that means that everything that happens in the world is Tov. In spite of the fact that this is already in the Gemara, this idea that if something good happens, you make one bracha. When something bad may happen, you make a different bracha. It's only because of our weakness. I mean, it helps us to understand things, to categorize them as good and bad. But really, they're all good. They're all what God wants. So what God wants is good. Kevan shehakol mehashem yitbarach memela hakol tov. That's what he says. Ukemoshe nidrash b'Bereishit Rabbah al pasuk kol asher asah v'hinei tov ma'od. Right, that's what the Medrash says about the pasuk in Bereishit kol asher asah v'hinei tov ma'od. Shemerameis al kol hefech atov sheyet tov ma'od. That the opposite of tov, what you think is ra, is tov ma'od. It's even better than tov, right? It's the best. Ukemosha amarnu shevitam ze tiknu anshei Knesset Agdola uborei hakol bimkom borei ra. He says, and that's why the anshei Knesset Agdola, right, we say it every day, yotzer or uvorei choshech, oseh shalom, and in Yeshayahu it says, uborei ra. Uboreira, which Chazal fixed. I mean, this is kind of a pretty radical position. They fixed it and they said Boreta Kol, because we wouldn't get it otherwise. Some say that it's connected to the Persian religion that saw the world as being a constant battle between good and evil. And that eventually the evil would be vanquished by the prince of good, Ahura Mazda. And the Chachamim didn't want the Jews who davened every day to fall into that trap and to become enamored of this Persian idea, so they changed the Pasuk. Now, it's easy enough to say that, but how exactly it happened? I mean, how did they do that? And how was it everybody accepted it? And why didn't people complain as they would complain today about messing up a pasuk in Yeshayahu? I don't know the answer to any of those questions.
Isn't there also a principle that you can't take a quote exactly from a pasuk and incorporate it into a bracha?
Well, you can't chop up a pasuk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, it's all true. But there are things that happen on their own. You know, and then it becomes more or less a question of the Chachomim approving of it or trying to fight against it. And anybody who's ever been a rabbi in a shul knows that it's very hard to fight with Balabatim. And when, you know, people think they're right, then they're right. There's nothing you can do. So here he goes on and he says, now listen, Yaakov hu anahar hayotzei mi'eden lashkot et hagan shehu b'chinat Knesset Yisrael. So Yaakov, right, is the, he says, this is in the Zohar, he says Yaakov Hu hanahar hayotzei me'eden. Eden is a place where everybody thinks is very close to God. Right? Gan Eden. You walk around and God is walking around with you. It's like that. And then to get into the world, there was a nahar, a river. Sheyotzei me'eden. Who's the river Ayotzei Me'eden? Yaakov Avinu. Lashkot et Hagan Shul Bechinat Knesset Yisrael She'akol Tov. In other words, Yaakov Avinu somehow stands pivotally in between some rarefied relationship to God, Avram Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, and the spreading of that even outside of the Gan, outside of this wondrous garden. V'alkein amar Yaakov Avinu alav shalom v'chi yesh lo kol shehu sheyesh lo mida zo shenikra kol. That Yaakov Avinu yesh lo kol. Yesh lo kol. What is kol? What is kol? Kol? It says by Avram Avinu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, Avram Avinu had kol. And what does Rashi say? Ben yesh lo. Bat yesh lo. Kol. Kol means, well, it's a machlokes tanoim, whether it means a son or a daughter, but for our purposes, it means the next generation. In other words, Yaakov, Avram Avinu had everything you could possibly want. He had everything, but when the Chachamim wanted to explain what the Torah meant when it said that Avram Avinu had everything, it said that Avram Avinu also had the next generation. He had a continuing. He was able to bestow whatever he had discovered for himself onto the next generation. And that's what kol is. And that's what Yaakov says, kol. He had kol, like Avram Avinu. V'av sheYosefu merkava lemida zosh nikra kol kiyadua. And Yosef was the kind of closest one to this, right? Because he had two sons who became the sons of Yaakov Avinu, right? Yeah, he was the merkava. Merkava is a chariot that somehow the Shekhinah sits upon. Like he holds him up. He holds it up. Ki kol da'achid mishmaya v'aro. Everything that combines heaven and earth. Haynu sheyamshik mishamayim shehu b'chinat Yaakov Avinu alav shalom la'aretz shehu b'chinat Knesset Yisrael. So the star of connecting Eden, the Nahar, the river coming out of Eden, and the tributaries of that river, which are the children and the future generations, that was Yaakov Avinu. Avram Avinu had many sons, but only one who accepted entirely the spirit and the content of the traditions of Avram Avinu, that was Yitzchak. And Yishmael, who also participated in the burial, that moment of accepting the highest amount of inheritance. Okay, he was a Baal Tshuva. I mean, he had to do it on his own. He wasn't that way at the beginning. Yitzchak, who was buried by Esav and Yaakov, Esav preceding Yaakov, he had to, at that time, he had not yet been able to rid himself of this monkey on his back called Esav, Asher Kariti Li. He does it. He gets rid of Esav. He buys the Marat HaMachpelah, and then when he goes to get buried, when it comes time for him to die, he says, "I want my burial to be the burial of all my children together, without any distinction." And this idea was popularized by the Egyptians who came to the burial place of Avram, of Yaakov Avinu, right? And this idea is further refined in this Pritzadik, who points out to us that the greatness of Yaakov was that he was the conduit. He was the ultimate conduit, and he created Am Yisrael. That's the question we asked at the beginning, where he started talking. How did he create Am Yisrael? Because he created that situation where everybody's in. It doesn't mean everybody's good. Right? At the time of Avram, at the time of Yitzchak, if you were good, you were in. But if you were not good, you had to be sent away. Yaakov changed that. Yaakov flowed, because the river is always flowing and it's always coming somehow into those tributaries, and everybody is kind of taking a note and being taught and learning and understanding. No one is out. No one ever is denied a place at the funeral of his father. Now, you may know of instances when this happened, but it doesn't interest me. The idea is that from Yaakov Avinu's time on, there was a change. And that change was that everybody was in. And since everybody was in, after the years of slavery in Mitzrayim, there were hundreds of thousands of Jews. And that could never happen under the old pre-Yaakov system. And the hint for all of this is the burials. The burials of Avram and then Yitzchak and now Yaakov, and especially the Pasuk Asher Kariti Li, and the fact that all of Egypt went with the burial party to Marat HaMachpelah in order to make sure that everybody knew that this was an event of great significance. The great significance, of course, was that we're now talking about Am Yisrael, and that's what happened in Shemot. And you know, there's a question, at the beginning of Shemot, they count all the people, the Torah counts all the people who went out to Mitzrayim, and we know who they were. But there's a difference, right? The first time in the Parsha Miketz that we find out the names of the people who went down to Mitzrayim, they were all individuals when they went to Mitzrayim. They were in, they were not in, right? But when they, in the beginning of Shemot, they are the 70 people who constitute the nation of Israel. Nation of Israel, where every child is part of the nation. And that's the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. The story of Moshe Rabbeinu is the story of saving a child, jeopardizing everybody for a single child. And that was the change that took place at this time, the burial of Yaakov Avinu. Have a good Shabbos.